On this episode, I have one of the most powerful people in finance. And how did he launch his career? Hacking the Price is Right. Alex Benayan will tell us all about that and some of his best friends, including Bill Gates, Lady Gaga, and even Warren Buffett.
This is Entrepreneurs the Playbook, where each week I bring you some of the greatest athletes, celebrities, and entrepreneurs to talk about their personal and professional playbook to success and what made them champions on the field and in the boardroom. I'm your host and CEO of Sports One Marketing, David Meltzer.
This is Dave Meltzer with Entrepreneurs the Playbook, and I have Alex Benayan here, the amazing best-selling author of The Third Door.
Thank you very much.
I consider my life The Third Door. The subtitle is The Wildest Quest to Uncover How the World's Most Successful People Launch Their Careers. If you stopped at launch your careers, that's the advice I would give everyone to whatever you want. Is the biggest mistake I made when I was all your guys' age was I didn't ask the most successful people in the world at blank about blank. When now at 51, that's all I do. I go find with tenacity the people who are the most successful in the world. If I want to learn how to swim, I'm going literally, you know, to the USA Olympic team and asking the coach.
You're calling up Phelps. You're like, give me your top five tips.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And you know what? And I'm doing what you did. How did you get this idea at such a young age? You're a 30 under 30 guy, Alex. How did you get this idea of humility at such a young age?
You know, this journey really started when I was 18. You know, I was a freshman in college, not too far from here. I was spending every day lying on my dorm room bed, staring up at the ceiling. And, you know, I don't know if you, I know you've always been into sports. I don't know if you've had a, what do I want to do with my life crisis?
And not crisis, but yes, I've asked myself that.
You know, I'm going through this crisis and.
And you're pre-med, right?
Yeah. And to understand why I'm pre-med and going through this crisis, you have to understand I'm the son of Jewish immigrants.
Oh, good. You have my story. Okay. Doctor, lawyer, yes, or failure.
Yes. Correct.
Yeah. That's why I was pre-med.
I don't know why your parents gave you the third option. Because for me, option two was when you can get option. So pretty much my sisters are lawyers. Everyone in my family's a doctor.
I got a rabbi as a brother too. So imagine that. I don't know where that falls into the formula.
So you have
but
ethics in your family.
That's like amazing. The king. Right. Like you do not want to be the rabbi's brother.
Correct. And what's so funny is, you know the story. I pretty much came out of the womb. My mom cradled me in her arms and she stamped MD on my ass and sent me on my way.
Right. You're not full. The fetus isn't fully developed till after graduate school. Then you can do whatever you want.
I'm going to literally call my mom right after this and tell her that she's going to love
it. Oh, God, this is going to be good.
So you get the story. And you have to understand the reason I'm going through that, what I want to do with my life crisis, is because of that backstory. And, you know, in high school, I checked all the boxes. I took all the, you know, science classes, studied for the SATs. I even went to pre-med summer camp at UCLA. So I was like.
Well, can I stop you? Because yes. I imagine your mom, most people wouldn't know this about most Jewish mothers, but I imagine your mom is a black belt in the martial arts.
Oh, the mental guilt.
Yeah, there you go. Arts, the third degree black belt in guilt.
When he's in martial arts, I'm like, she doesn't do physical activity. Oh, martial arts. Yeah, exactly.
Every real Jewish boy is like, oh, martial arts. Yeah. And this reinvented guilt, other people may have perfected
correct.
It.
And we are who we are because of our moms.
Right.
Because of the love, because of the support, but also
the driven forces.
Right. So, you know, I couldn't love my mom more, which actually is why when I was on that dorm room bed going through this crisis, she was the last person I could tell I'm going through this.
Right.
She had sacrificed, you know, she worked sometimes 20-hour days. There was a second mortgage on the house to help me pay for school. So when I'm going through this, what do I want to do with my life crisis, I can't tell anyone. So, you know, what naturally happened is this crisis started to evolve into questions of, you know, how did Bill Gates sell his first piece of software out of his dorm room when he was my age?
Yeah.
Or how did Spielberg become the youngest director in Hollywood history without a single hit under his belt? You know, this is what they don't teach you in school.
Yeah.
So I just assumed there had to be a book with the answers. So I'm going to the library and I'm just ripping through biographies and self-help books.
All you could find was Napoleon Hill, Think and Grow Rich.
Right. You know what's funny? You know, there's Napoleon Hill. There was even at that time the 4-Hour Workweek had come out. Yeah. There was Outliers. But there wasn't a single book that focused on the stage that I cared about.
Right.
When no one takes your calls, no one takes your meetings, how do you find a way to break through? And I didn't care so much about an age in people's life. It was more a stage.
Right.
You know, when you're trying to, it doesn't matter if you're 60 or if you're 16.
Launching a career was the
stage. How do you make this dream a reality? And that's when I found myself empty-handed. So that's when my naive 18-year-old thinking kicked in. I thought, you know, if no one's written the book I'm dreaming of reading, why not write it myself? You know, I thought it'd be super simple. I'll just call up Bill Gates, interview him, interview everybody else, and I'll be done in a few months.
Yeah.
That I thought would be the easy part. The hard part I figured was getting the money to fund this journey. You know, I was buried in student loan debt.
Yeah.
I was all out of bar mitzvah cash. So there had to be a way to make some quick money. So
you gotta launch a career to launch the career book.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So, you know, two nights before final exams, you know, I'm still thinking about this. And, you know, I'm doing what everyone's doing in the library right before finals. I'm on Facebook. And, you know, I'm on Facebook and I see someone offering free tickets to The Price is Right. And my first thought was, what if I go on the show and win some money to fund this dream? You know, not my brightest moment.
Yeah, yeah.
Plus, I had a problem.
A manifesting moment.
Well, this is the thing. I'd never seen a full episode of the show before. I've seen, you know, when you're homesick from school in fourth grade, it's the only thing on TV.
Yeah, yeah.
But I've never seen a full episode of the show.
When there's only six shows on, you had to watch Price
Correct.
Is Right.
Yeah, we had one of those, like, attendas that you had to, like, move around.
That's okay, cool.
It's CBS. Okay, you want NBC? You had to, like, move them all around.
Right. Cool.
Yeah, we did not have cable as kids growing up. And it's part of the Jewish mother read books, become a doctor culture. Do you know what's so funny? Just even going into my childhood, parents put finger paintings on the refrigerator
yeah,
as a kid.
Yeah.
My mom put skeleton charts.
Really?
So that's the whole genesis of all this. So
beautiful.
Anyway, so I'm, you know, sitting there and I have this thought of The Price is Right. And, you know, I tell myself it's a dumb idea. Anyone with half a brain knows this is an idiotic idea.
During finals especially.
Right. Especially when so much was on the line for me personally. And, you know, I told myself to not think about it. But I don't know if you've ever had one of these moments where an idea just keeps clawing itself back into your mind.
Yeah.
So almost to prove to myself it was a bad idea, I remember opening my notebook. You know, I'm at this little round table in the corner of the library and I write, you know, best and worst case scenarios. And I remember writing worst case scenarios. Fail finals, get kicked out of pre-med, lose financial aid, mom stops talking to me, no, mom kills me. You know, there's like 20 cons.
And one.
And, you know, the only pro was.
I win.
Yeah, maybe win enough money to fund this dream. And it was almost as if somebody had tied a rope around my gut and was slowly pulling in a direction. So that night I decided to do the logical thing and pull an all-nighter to study. But I didn't study for finals. I said I'd hack The Price is Right. And I went on the show the next day and did this ridiculous strategy and ended up winning the whole showcase showdown, winning a sailboat, selling the sailboat, and that's how I funded
the book. What was
your
strategy to get on the show, which is the hardest part, I think?
Exactly. So during my all-nighter, I pretty much had a realization. There's 300 people in the audience. Eight get called down as contestants, and one out of those eight wins. So one out of eight, you know, is not impossible odds.
Right. One in 300.
Right.
Yeah.
That's the impossible part. So
right.
I pretty much studied, you know, I was Googling how the show worked and how they pick contestants until 4 o'clock in the morning. And I finally found out, as I'm sure you know,
yeah,
there's a producer who interviews every person in the audience. And then on top of that, there's an undercover producer planted
watch
in the audience
it, right,
who then confirm
and
or deny.
And they watch you in line too.
Correct. And it's
yeah,
just like everything in life, I'm sure you know. Although it looks like random luck, there's a system to it.
Sure. Yeah, I know. And I've been a part of that as well. So having my own TV show. And so you win.
Yes.
And now you go out and you're like Rudy Rudiger, right? People think making Notre Dame's team and getting to play one play for Notre Dame looking like he did and with terrible grades was the
right
achievement. The achievement of Rudy really was making the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Right, like getting on the field, like as a walk-on, that's amazing. Winning, you know, your first time ever at Price is Right is amazing, but not nearly as amazing as a four-year journey to make this sucker.
Thank you, man.
And you know, knowing about it, learning about you, I think of one word, and it's the idea of you don't get unless you ask. And you, same way, reverse engineer. How am I going to not only meet these people? Breaking into boardrooms,
right,
chasing people at grocery stores.
Exactly.
Right, doing the outrageous, but it's not outrageous. That's what it takes to be successful in life, right? You can't sit at home high on your mom's couch dreaming about what you want. And I believe you can't sit around studying in a library trying to be a doctor. Like, if you really want to be a doctor,
unless that's your thing.
Yeah, but if that's your thing, right. You're still not sitting in the library studying.
You're going
to
hospitals,
doctor.
Meeting other doctors. Exactly. Exactly.
Well,
and that's the thesis of the book. That's literally the thesis, what you just said, because you've been living it.
Yeah, so explain that thesis in not Dave Meltzer terms, but in a 26-year-old person's term of what, because I live that.
Yeah.
How would you, and articulating things are so important. It's not what you say, it's how you say it. So I really want people to listen to how you say it. What is the thesis of what we're talking about?
So over the past 7 years, when I had started, there was no intention for me to find that, you know, one key to success. You know, we've all seen those TED Talks or business books, and normally I just roll my eyes.
Right.
But what ended up happening is after these 7 years of interviews, it sort of became unavoidable. It didn't matter if it was Maya Angelou or Steve Wozniak. They all treated life and business and success the exact same way. And it's literally exactly like what you said. And the analogy that came to me, because I was 21 at the time, is that it's sort of like getting into a nightclub. There's always three ways in. So there's the first door, the main entrance, where the line curves around the block, where 99% of people wait around hoping to get in. And then there's the second door, the VIP entrance, where the billionaires and celebrities go through, you know, if they're your client.
Yeah.
And then,
well, now it's me, brother.
Right, exactly.
I went from not famous to just you famous, where I'd get in line and they're like, just you, and my wife's looking at me like, what do you mean? Right? And then you finally get to the line where it's like, yeah, everybody, come on.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so that's the second door.
So there's the first door, the second door, and school and society like you to think that those are the only two ways in.
Yeah.
You're either born into it or you wait your turn like everybody else. But what I've learned is that there's always, always the third door. And it's the entrance where you jump out of line, run down the alley, bang on the door 100 times, crack open the window, go through the kitchen. There's always a way in. And it doesn't matter if that's how Gates sold his first piece of software, how Lady Gaga got her first record deal. They all took the third door.
Yeah, and I think that key, the way that I articulate it, the key to the third door is being more interested than interesting.
Hmm.
Like a simple concept of just not being average, just not accepting what everyone else says. It's interesting because I talk about judgments a lot and control.
Yeah.
And the problem that we have as human beings is we allow other people, meaning the people in the first line, the people in the second line, to take control of us.
Hmm.
We allow them to take control. We allow them to steal our joy. We allow them to set the limits for us. We allow them to set our own expectations. And we cannot allow to do that. And when we want to practice that, and you have more experience, because you know what we have in common is in the sports world, running Lee Steinberg, I was around everybody.
Hmm.
And I was asking questions.
Right.
I had better access than you. I didn't have to use my be more interested than interesting to get in front of them. But I can't tell you how many people in my industry are in front of them and they're not asking.
Hmm.
Right? And here you are. But the key was I wasn't going to give my judgment or try to take control of others, because I immediately then separated myself from the source.
Right.
The minute I take judgment, I made attacking thoughts, I try to take control of others by giving them limitations, conditions. What if instead of being a manipulator and somebody who derives power from them, instead turns it around and says, I am a man of unconditional behavior, of non-judgment and non-conditions, and what my job is to do is to empower you, is to listen to you and try to help you find the key so you don't have to run all the way around the wall to get in the club. You don't got to dig in underneath. You don't have to try to climb over, but instead find that little key by being more interested than interesting and turning it and walking right in.
100%.
Now, once you got there, the other remarkable thing that I learned, so you got the third door strategy, was you had chutzpah, so that means nerve, or balls in other people's language. You had nerve to ask and to keep asking after you built the relationship, how important it is to ask.
You know, it's funny. This book, you know, when I had started writing the book, I thought that this was going to be, you know, just a series of Q&As, you know, one chapter on Bill Gates, one chapter on Lady Gaga. I thought that would be it. What it's turned into, you know, is completely 180. It's this narrative, you know, this story, page-turning adventure, where literally the essence of it is what you just asked, which is, it's a story of random strangers coming to bat for you. And, you know, there's a saying, you know, there are good people in the world. This is like the fucking testament. But it's why you said the key to it is asking. And, you know, one of the people who I met on the journey is the founder of the TED conference. And he said he lives his life by two mantras. his whole life by two rules. Number one, if you don't ask, you don't get. And number two, most things don't work out. And I love I love the juxtaposition of those two things because I'm sure you know for your business, if you don't ask, you don't get, but also 90% of things won't work out.
Yeah.
But that doesn't matter. One of my favorite quotes by Mark Cuban is like, the best thing about business is it's not like basketball that you have to make, you know, 80 points for your team. Business, you need one jump shot to sink in.
Yeah.
You just need one.
Yeah, it's interesting because defining what working out means is so important.
Right.
Right. And so if we're attaching ourselves to an end, and I agree, you know, there's two questions I ask everyone. One, and I've changed my whole perspective, but it's how can I be of service?
Mm-hmm.
I've learned that because I have access, if I can start by figuring out how I can provide value. I was blessed to be around Adrian Peterson and his wife, Ashley, at the Super Bowl and had some interviews with them, et cetera. And they were super surprised and said to me, God, Dave, you're the first person that didn't ask us for anything.
Hmm.
Everyone else is manipulators, takers, et cetera. And you just sat there, kept on telling us, hey, I can do this for you. Can I do this for you? Can I do this for you? Yeah. And then when you establish value and create a void, you can say, how do you know anyone that can help me? Right? I never ask anyone, you know, Alex, can you help me? What I always say is, do you know anyone that can help me? Right. Because self-included in that is yourself.
Of course.
But there's less resistance of directly asking by
and you're not putting someone on the hook.
Yeah, and you're allowing them to be of service as well, which is a benefit. Right. Now,
people like to help. I think that's what you just said.
Of course.
People like to
help. You're giving them a gift when you ask them.
Correct. And a big part of this journey was learning how to ask for help.
Yeah. And what biggest lesson did you get as far as... Because people say, Dave, do you actually say to people, how can I be of service? And anyone that's DMing me and knows, yes, I do ask directly. But I also am, I build to it, right? I offer, it's not like I'm asking. I'm actually, I have a technique of doing it, talking about reasons, impacts, and capabilities. What is one technique that you would utilize in order to ask for help?
Do you know what's funny? The biggest thing that I like to remember is that most people are not in your position, right? Where they're at the Super Bowl doing stuff like this, right? If you're like 99% of people, like where I was when I was just starting out, the biggest thing I can advise people to do is to master the cold email.
Cold email.
Because an ask in a cold email, this is the thing. DMs, yes, work in certain demos. You know, not everyone has access to go to, you know, Los Angeles or to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you're lucky enough to have internet access, you can write a cold email. So it's really applicable to everybody. And this is the cold email template.
Yep.
And I got this, you know, the backstory is that I chased Tim Ferriss, the, you know, the author of the 4-Hour Workweek down. I hid in a bathroom for 30 minutes and defend and jumped out of the bathroom. It's its own preposterous story. But I ended up getting the interview with him. And the biggest thing he taught me was this secret cold email template. And this is how it works. Ready? So it goes, you know, dear so-and-so, I know you're incredibly busy and get a lot of emails, so this will only take 60 seconds to read. Boom, next paragraph.
Yep.
1 to 2 sentences max of who you are and what credibility is relevant to that person. This is not a life story section.
Right.
2 sentences. Boom, next paragraph. A hyper-specific question that someone can answer right away. You know, David, what's the best book you recommend for someone who wants to get into sports marketing? Something that you don't have to think about and that you can answer right away. And then the final paragraph is the clincher. I totally understand if you're too busy to respond. Even a 1 or 2 line reply will completely make my day. All the best, Alex. And what that does, and I think the ending is so counterintuitive to what everyone else does. You know, thanks for it. Thanks in advance. Looking forward to your reply. It takes them off the hook to say, look, totally understand if you don't want to respond. Even one sentence will mean the world to me.
And who wouldn't take one sentence to mean the world? So,
right. And
it's so interesting you say that because I tell people all the time, in person, on the phone, email, and media, print, radio, TV, and social are the ways that you ask. Mm-hmm. And you have to have a specific template to do so. Just like leaving a message.
Right.
I always tell people, if you have a phone call, just on the backwards advice to you, because I was not as famous enough to get into the third door. But I'll be in the fourth. I'll be in the fourth door. But Alex will come to me. He'll get it. But I'm going to give you this template, and people don't realize it. When I leave a message, right? I'm calling someone, leaving a message. Could be a cold call, could be a warm call, could be a set meeting, and somebody doesn't answer. When I was young, I'd create resistance. I'd have a need to be offended. My ego would get in the way, and my message would carry the energy of offense, which is the best way never to get called back. Then you're wondering why they don't call back, and you keep on calling, and you've now ruined a lead, right. Warm, cold, or otherwise. It's very simple. Hey, you know, you and I had a 3 o'clock. I'm so sorry. I'm sure you're caught up in a meeting or in another line.
Right, you're saying sorry, and you're the one who didn't miss the meeting.
Exactly.
Right.
And I give them the out, though. I'm sure you're caught up in another meeting or on the other line. When you get a chance and it's convenient, give me a call back.
Right.
Right? Something along those lines where you take all the energy out of it with humility, and you give empathy of, I'm sure something happened. You know why? Because something happens to me all the time.
Something probably did happen.
Exactly.
This is the thing.
I'm going to look forward to talking to you. Thanks so much. Or give me a call back as soon as possible. Even to the point where people don't realize when they're leaving a message, don't sell on an email. Don't sell on a phone message. No one's ever bought on a voicemail.
Right.
I've never met one person. When I'm thousands of people speaking in my keynotes, I'm like, who here has bought off of a voicemail? You're like, oh, geez, I'm going to order.
Right.
But I can't tell you how many messages I get selling to me. Mm. All right. This is too short of a podcast, as you know.
We can go for 5 hours.
Yeah, and we're going to, by the way, because okay, you are my kind of guy, and we're local, so we're going to get together and do some cool stuff. You are a 30 under 30. You've written this. You're the aggregate of those people you surround yourself with. You've elevated your vibration to those of the greatest minds of success of how to launch their business. What are you going to do with it all now?
You know, so I've been on book tour for the past 6 months, and as much as I tried to just focus on book tour, you know, you and I are similar where you just naturally think what's next.
Yeah, and we still got the moms on us.
Right, exactly.
One book's not enough, I'm sure.
Right. And
my other brother's a doctor.
Your other brother's a rabbi.
And my other brother's
a
doctor.
You have a way worse.
I got doctor.
You have a way
worse. I have
worse.
A law degree at least, so I got that on you. I got a law degree. I never use it.
I'm sure it's framed at your mom's house.
Yeah, exactly. This is mine here.
Exactly.
I got Gary Vee and my Ellis Island Medal of Honor. She can have my law degree.
I love that.
All right, what's next? What are you going to do?
So, you know, what's been coming into my mind.
Yeah.
Is that I've realized that when I, you know, and I mentioned this, when I had started this book, I just wanted it to be the most practical, you know, how much wisdom can I pack into 300 pages kind of book. And, you know, in some ways that
happened.
It happened. You know, there's Bill Gates' Negotiating Secrets, there's Tim Ferriss' Cold Email Template. But only now that the book's done can I look back on it and really understand what the soul of this mission was. And to me, the soul of this book was about possibility. And if there's one thing that I've learned over the past 7 years, it's that you can give someone all the best tools and knowledge in the world, and their life can still feel stuck. But if you change what someone believes is possible, they'll never be the same. And there's this one anecdote that's come to my mind recently, and I sort of can't get it out of my mind. And I read it somewhere in my research over the past few years, and it's about a teacher who's teaching for Teach for America. And she was assigned to a really rough part of Baltimore, really tough school. She's teaching maybe third or fourth grade. And she thinks, you know, these kids need some inspiration. So, you know, she sits them down. And she's like, all right, today, instead of our math class, we're all going to draw pictures of our biggest dream in life. You know, what you want to be when you grow up. So she passes out the papers and the crayons. And, you know, all the kids start coloring, except for this one boy sitting in the back of the class. And the teacher's concerned, and he won't pick up a crayon. But then like 30 minutes later, his eyes light up and he starts coloring. And at the end of the day, the teacher collects the papers. The kids go home and she's going through them. And she sees that that young boy drew a picture of a pizza delivery man. And the teacher was heartbroken, so she called the mother that night. The mother said that she wasn't surprised. She said that the only male figure in his life who's not in jail or on drugs
or dead.
Is his uncle who delivers pizza. And what I took from that story is that young people will always reach for the highest branch they believe is possible. They will always reach for the highest branch they believe is possible. So it's our jobs, whether it's families or schools or the people creating culture at large, to illuminate more branches. And that's really my mission moving forward.
I love that. I can't wait for you to read Connected to Goodness, because it's about the system that I created to make the what, the possibility, to create a why, the inspiration, but to utilize faith to take the possibility to a probability. But how do we do the discipline, the strategy, the awareness, the faith in order to make your probability your reality? And what I like about your book is that you took a possibility a possibility of winning Price is Right, turned it into probability of interviewing the most powerful people in the world of how they launch their businesses. And through discipline, strategy, and awareness, and faith, you made it a reality. And I congratulate on you.
Thank you.
Look forward to co-mentoring you and working with you, because only great things are happening. I love to surround myself with the right people and the right ideas. And can't wait to dig even deeper into the third door. You got to get it. Best-selling author, Alex Banyan with The Third Door. You can learn a lot right here between 300 pages. Enjoy it. This is Dave Meltzer with Alex Banyan on Entrepreneurs, The Playbook. Well, I hope you enjoyed this week's episode of The Playbook as much as me. On a personal note, I just wanted to thank everyone for making The Playbook such a success. Don't forget to continue it by sharing, subscribing, and listening to your favorite episodes. This is Dave Meltzer with The Playbook.